listeners. My name's Jenny Mather. They know me as the Dog Lady. I own JM Pet Resort and JM Pet Bed in Brockton, Massachusetts. And we're going to do a show that's going to be a little fun about everything you want to know about cats and dogs. Training, grooming, veterinary care. Where's the best place to get things for your dogs? How we can help them if they have an overweight problem. You name it. You send in a question, we'll try to address it. And today we have some very special guests to start this show. It's an exciting day. We have Dr. Page. He works at the JM Pet Vet. And in my career, he's one of the most compassionate, knowledgeable veterinarians. I'm sure you'll find the same as you start listening to him. Hello, Dr. Page.
Hello. Thank you. Appreciate
welcome.
It.
You're welcome.
I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, and we also have Joyce Poliotti, who is our hospital administrator, and she has been in this industry for, I won't reveal your age, Joyce.
Thank you, because you know I'm staying 29 forever.
Right, exactly. So, but it's been a long, long time, let's suffice it to say that. She's been working in veterinary medicine for as long as I've known her, and we've been friends for more than 2 years. No, I'm just kidding. More than almost 20 years we're going on. So, she's got some great insight for some of these questions as well. And so one of the most interesting questions that I thought was brought to our attention, because I get it all the time, is my dog is a picky eater, and how do I find something that he will like? So there's a lot of answers to that, but Dr. Page, do you have anything you want to say about that?
Just trying different things with your pet, or trying to add in different products that might be able to help them have it a little bit more tasty.
Palatable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And sometimes you can, they make some gravies that you can put in that'll make it a little bit more interesting for them.
Mm-hmm.
Some dogs prefer moist food rather than dry. Kind of just depends on the dog. You can also, soak the dry food in some warm water. Sometimes if it's a little bit warmer, they'll be able to eat it a little bit better as well.
Right. So I get a lot of these questions in the store, and we deal with a lot of holistic foods. There are many different grades of food, and I find that the, in my opinion, less desirable foods, because they're not as healthy, tend to be much more palatable. And it's kind of like the old McDonald's thing, it might taste really good, and it does, but it's not the greatest for you every day. So sometimes, sometimes, who's so rude? You find that you have to kind of get over that slump of being a picky eater, and also leaving the food down, because it can be behavioral, actually causes finicky behavior. So if it's available to them all the time, then they don't have a reason to really eat it down and be done with it. So oftentimes people will feel like, oh, geez, my dog's not eating, so I'm going to leave it for the day. When in fact, it's really counterproductive, because if you don't pull up that food after 20 minutes so that they seem like they need to eat it, and then when you give it to them later, they're really hungry, so they do eat it, what you do is you create this cycle where you're always adding things to your food, trying to figure out what they like, when in fact they're just making you do tricks. So I find that in the realm of dog foods, the foods that have more protein, that tend to be more expensive, are much more palatable, because that's what they are. They are carnivores. And I find that foods that, have a lot of marketing about dogs running in a field of wheat with vegetables falling from the sky is not always the best food, because, again, they're carnivores. They don't stock corn. So those are the type of things that we kind of look at, is protein content, and also, it's not a one-size-fits-all, as Dr. Page said. It's, every dog is different. So you can try one really high-quality food, and they don't like it, or they may get an upset stomach, and then you try another high-quality food, and they scarf it right down. But boredom will set in if you are constantly leaving your food down.
I think it's important, too, that, if you're doing a lot of switching of, trying to find different foods, especially dogs with sensitive stomachs, to really slowly, introduce some of those diets, even over a period of several days, even a week, just slowly start adding the new food into their old food until they're totally on the new diet.
Yeah, definitely. I agree. You definitely have to wean. A stark switch can be a very messy situation, and then you think that the food's not good because the dog doesn't feel good, but it's much like many people can relate to how you change children's diets. You know, initially they're just on formula or breast milk, and when you first start introducing food, they have an upset stomach, and that's because their stomach hasn't developed yet to handle that change. But we don't stop feeding them food. We don't go back to formula. We slowly introduce one thing at a time. And so that actually brings me to another question where people say, well, what's the, you know, should I switch my food around? I found one that works. Should I stay on it? And there's different schools of thought on this. I happen to subscribe in my own life with my own dogs, and what I recommend is that you do rotate foods. And there's many reasons for that, but the most logical one I found is if you go back to that analogy of adding foods that are different to a child, you would add one, and then you would add another, and then you would add another, and what you would be doing is creating a strong stomach and a healthy immune system because you're introducing all these different things. Because basically, different proteins, different nutrients, they all serve a different purpose for us. And so if you just stick with one stoic type of food, then basically the value of that food is only that food. Whereas because so many different foods have all these different qualities, switching them up, you get a lot of different nutrients. But then also, by creating a stronger stomach and weaning over the course of a year a few times, what happens is because these dogs, as we know, get into everything, if you've got a dog that has a stronger stomach because you've been weaning and changing, they do not get into these huge sicknesses that these animals that are introduced something new at a barbecue are sick for 3 days and in the hospital. And so that's why that's my strongest reason for wanting to switch over is that there are so many animals that get very sick, especially around the holidays, because they eat something off diet. And sometimes it's just because it's too much fat and it doesn't matter how much weaning you're doing. But all in all, a lot of these animals, if they were weaning regularly and were trying new things, they would be sick for like a day or two instead of, you know, having a fit of pancreatitis or something like that. So,
yeah, I don't know.
Do you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know if people realize just how much the immune system plays a role in the gut. There's a big portion of the immunity that is in there, and so you know when a dog is eating and takes in food, you know some of the first things that it encounters is the immune system.
Mm-hmm.
So certainly they build up a tolerance for things that they ingest, having that immunity there is very important.
Right. I mean, because a lot of times, even in a facility like ours, because, you know, so our facility does a lot of dogs. We have multiple, like, lots and lots of dogs all the time. So what comes along with that, even though you might be safe or clean, which, you know, is a top priority, as clean as you are, these dogs still carry different germs that they are resistant to that they don't get sick from. And the reason why they don't get sick from them is because they've been exposed to them, maybe had some sort of slight reaction to them and learned how to fight them off, but these immune-mediated responses have built a good immune system. Whereas a dog that's never exposed to this stuff and they're a first-time come-in, they're for sure, and if they're nervous, it lowers their immune system, they're for sure going to have some sort of bout of something.
Right, it's just like kids when they go to daycare or
exactly
when they start school or when they first go back to school after the summer. You know, they just get sick the first time that they go back or the first time that they go to daycare just because they're just being exposed to novel things that they haven't been exposed
right.
to.
Right, and the benefit, I think, because that's a good point, is that over time, as they get older and stronger, they don't get as sick, but if you kept them in a bubble and just didn't bring them anywhere, imagine the 18-year-old child has never been exposed to any of those viruses and then stuck in some type of environment where all those viruses are. You'd have a very sick person.
Yep.
So, you know, it's it's funny how food and immunity and all that stuff plays into just making us very healthy, whole individuals.
Absolutely.
You had an interesting question. This one comes up a lot. It actually just came up with my cousin. So I'll let you handle it. But my story is I had a client come in. She was texting me, and she kept saying, I don't understand why Lenny is itching his body all over. He's got to have some sort of something. And I said, oh, well, we'll have to skin scrape him for mites. I'll talk to Dr. Page. And it turns out it was the most simple thing. He was wearing a Seresto collar, so we had ruled out fleas, but I didn't ask the appropriate question of where did that Seresto collar come from. And what a Seresto collar is it's basically a product that lasts for 9 months that is a flea and tick preventative. It's one of the best things on the market right now. So the fact that she told me she had it, in my mind, I just ruled out fleas. And so I'll let you take it away. So,
yeah. So, I mean, you know, a lot of flea and tick medications are available online. You do a simple Google search and you'll see about 50 Amazon.com links come up for all different sorts of fleas and flea and tick medications, as well as heartworm medication as well. But what a lot of people don't realize is that a lot of these medications require a veterinarian to order them. And so they're not really available to be sold in this manner. So some of these things can be counterfeit. They can be a totally different ingredient or a different manufacturing process that you get, even though it looks like the same exact product.
And it's not the same as a fake Gucci bag, girls.
Right.
Because we can pull off a Gucci bag, but you cannot pull off a fake flea collar.
Gucci is my favorite, by the way. you have to be really careful. And even if you're ordering from a reputable site like, you know, Amazon, a lot of those things that you buy are actually from third-party sellers. And Amazon is just acting as a intermediary. Even if you're getting the real product, you really don't know where that product's been.
Or how long it's been there.
Exactly. I mean, right. It could be sitting in a warehouse for a couple of years and you know, it's not temperature controlled. So the difference between, you know, getting a flea and tick medication online, you may save a few bucks, versus getting it from your veterinarian is you know where it came from. We're buying directly from the manufacturer. A lot of these manufacturers will also, you know, back their product up. If you say you got it from, you know, Joe Schmo's online pharmacy, the manufacturer is not going to, you know, help you out any. But if you, you know, got that product from your veterinarian, they're going to guarantee it. And so I think that's important, to realize, because as in the case with this dog with the Seresto, and the Seresto collar works very, very well, the dog had fleas.
Right. And so to bring that full circle, when she came in, I was shocked that the dog had fleas. And not only did he have fleas, he had this like really bad reaction and dermatitis because of it. And the thought was that she had fleas in her carpet. So, you know, she did save a few dollars on the Forward, but now look at all the struggles she has to go with. Now she's bombing her house. He's on medication. You know, he's got open sores. It's really quite sad. And so when I had said, you know, so I did say to her, you know, where did you get your Seresto collar? And she did say that she bought it online. I won't say where, but we knew right away that, you know, it just was not an effective product. She had only had it for a month. So luckily he's doing much better now. But, you know, that's a real life story of, you know, not getting things where you should get them. So.
And she did get a new collar.
She did. She did get a new collar. Yeah.
It's working great.
It's working great. Yep. So I think that's a nice little story. Another thing is, this is actually kind of funny too. So last night we did an event at a local brewery. Can I say the brewery name? So it was at Castle Island Brewery, J.M. Pet Resort and J.M. Pet Vet sponsored an event there. And so basically it was bring your dogs, and we were going to do training tips, and our trainers were going to be on site, and people were going to be able to drink and bring all these unruly dogs. It was after I thought it through, I thought maybe this is not such a good idea. But it turns out it was a great idea.
It was really fun.
It was fun. Like, really, really fun. If you didn't come, which I know you all didn't, then you missed out. But we'll tell you all about it. So a lot of people came in on harnesses. Like, it was a flood of dogs on harnesses. I think that that is the new go-to product. And from my perspective as a trainer, it was like 30 dogs that were uncontrollable and no way to control them because they were on a harness. Because realistically, when you put a dog on a harness or anything on a harness, we're trying to pull. You're trying to bring out drive. And so whether or not you put a clip on the front and kind of resist it a little bit, or, you know, you have these no-pull harnesses, it's still a harness that creates a lot of pressure on the chest. And by creating chest pressure on the chest, it's called oppositional resistance and force. And by, think about it, when you hold back someone who's trying to get to something, are they just held back, or do they try and push you even harder? What about someone who's got a little drive in them, like a guy in a bar who wants to fight someone, and then you try and hold them back? That's always trouble. Just get out of the way. Usually you can deflate it if you can just kind of soothe it down. But when you push on something, even if you grab your neighbor, it creates a tension and a stress. And so being tight on those dogs constantly in the beginning, before I was going around saying, loosen up, a loose leash is what creates a good dog, loosen up, loosen up. They're wrapped around their hands, their leashes, and they've got them tight as can be, and they're up on stilts, you know, two-legged dogs, because that's what the harness allows the dogs to do. And so you've got all these dogs that are actually nice dogs, but because they can't get at what they want, it's creating more drive, more drive, more drive. So what happens if they get off? They don't know what to do. And they're filled up with all this energy from creating drive. It's a very bad recipe. So basically, I walked around and ticked people off for the first half an hour saying, that's not the right equipment, that's not the right equipment, that's not the right equipment.
You, Jenny? No.
Yeah, right, never. Never. So, and I was switching out leashes and trying to show them. And it just, you don't need like a training collar, like a chain, or definitely not a prong collar. That's a talk for another day, but I'm very anti-prong collar. You can use positive reinforcement to basically change anything. It just takes more work. And the reason why it takes more work is because it actually works. It's not just solving a problem with force real quick. So basically, by letting your dogs know that the space bubble around you is safe and that they can be loose in there, they have no reason to stay tight. So if you let your dog out and he's tight all the time and you pull him back and you stay tight, then there's no difference from being tight at the end of the leash and tight next to you. So it's kind of hard to explain on radio, but basically keep your dog loose next to you, under control and a short leash, but not tethered, because tethering brings out more aggression. So after about 45 minutes, the dogs had all calmed down. Everybody was on a loose leash. They were all sniffing each other, playing. We were doing obedience stuff. It was just a really fun time. It was a lot of fun.
It was fun.
Yeah.
And actually, the dogs were very well behaved.
They were very well behaved. Yeah. And the ones that came in, so basically when a newbie comes in and they like stare up the pack, you know, and everybody wants to get up and like check that dog out, what was happening in the beginning is they were all going tight to say hi at first. But because the owners were all learning that that wasn't working for them and that being a little looser and a little nicer was working better, all you could hear in there was, so we use marking, it's called ah-ah, and it's redirection, it means guess again. So we heard ah-ah, good, ah-ah, good, ah-ah, good, 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 and you could hear the good. And basically that positive like sound makes the dog look to you and know that he's doing something right, and so he will aim towards that, because who wants to be gnawed to death? Initially, when the people came in, they had very tight leashes wrapped around their wrists, and they were saying, no, 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 no. No, my ears were hurting. So it was great. It was a really great time. So, and the question that applied to was, I feel like I say no to my dog more than I should. How can I be more positive? You just have to do it. You have to notice the good stuff. It's hard work, folks. Positive reinforcement is hard work, but the results are incredible. So
it's just like raising children, you know? Yeah. I mean, you sort of have to teach them the good things that you want them to learn and reinforce when they do good things.
Yeah, and as a mother, I have three children. That's hard. It is hard. You know, when my kids, because they're 11, 9, and 8 now, 11, 10, and 8 now, and when they are aggravating me, and I'm at a high stress level, and they are doing things that I know that they, you know, every cabinet is open, the cereal's on the counter, they're eating on the couch where they're not supposed to be, that, you know, their book bags are on the floor. It is hard to say, geez, I really liked how you were nice to your brother. Instead, I want to say, why are these cabinets open? What's going on with this? And I fail all the time. But dog training has taught me the best.
You could give some good tips to my fiance.
I'll text her. All right. So
I'll be in the doghouse for that one.
Yes, you will be in the doghouse for that one. So what about senior dogs? Because we hear a lot about senior dogs, and we're doing a big, like, you know, professionally, Dr. Page and Joyce have really been passionate about wanting to give back to senior wellness, because a lot of people do not, they're not proactive in their senior wellness to get, like, baseline labs, meaning blood work and things like that, so they know where their dog is at. So when something starts to go awry, because it will, they'll have something to compare to or to catch something early. And so it's interesting to me because a lot of people don't really know, you know, about senior wellness. So I'd like to talk about that, Joyce and Dr. Page, and also our seniors slowing down.
I think the biggest thing, you know, the biggest thing that we'll see with senior dogs is, you know, people will say, you know, that there's a little bit of trouble on the stairs, they're slow getting up, there's a limp here and there, but they're not in pain. And so that's the biggest comment that I get. Well, you know, if they're slow getting up, if they're, you know, having trouble going up the stairs, that's not, you know, it's because, you know, they can be a little stiff and everything. But yes, there is some pain there.
Yeah, they're definitely uncomfortable. Yeah. They're telling
and,
you that.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, they don't have to be crying out or whimpering, you know, to be in pain. And sometimes that can be very difficult to notice in a dog. You know, I have the saying that age isn't a disease. You know, certainly these older dogs, you know, they are more prone to diseases. But some of the biggest things that we see, you know, are certainly osteoarthritis in dogs. And there are some things that we can do to help them out with that. I think one of the biggest push right now are joint supplements, glucosamine, chondroitin, MSM. And so these are things that are naturally found in the joints and in the body. And as dogs get older, the production of these things may decrease. You know, providing them these supplements could help in, you know, reducing some of that inflammation associated with the arthritis. You're not going to really, you know, totally reverse any sort of arthritis that's there, but the goal is to, you know, to help make what's there a little bit more comfortable. And so there's, you know, you just walk into any, you know, pet store or anything and you see that there are hundreds of, you know, joint products you know, that are available for dogs and cats even. You know, having a discussion with your veterinarian about, you know, what joint supplement may be appropriate for your dog and, you know, their lifestyle, your budget and things is a very good idea. One of the other questions that I tend to get a lot is, well, they're slow going up the stairs. And that sometimes actually may not be because of joints. If you look at your senior dog and you notice that they have a little bit of a bluish tinge in their eyes, that's a normal age-related change in the lenses of the eyes. Some people mistake it for a cataract, but it's not. It's actually just a clouding of that lens, not an opaque material inside the lens. But what that can do is that can affect the depth perception in dogs. So, you know, going upstairs and things, they may not be able to judge where that next step is. So, you know, having a well-lit stairwell and things can actually help out a lot. Some people also say that, you know, they don't see the treat that's right in front of them. And so just like people, as we get older, some will need reading glasses. It's kind of the same thing. And obviously, if, you know, dogs are having a real tough time, you know, despite being on joint supplements and things like that. There are other medications that, you know, you can discuss with your veterinarian as far as anti-inflammatories or pain medication. And those can have, you know, a little bit more side effects than, you know, just supplements can. So it's important to, you know, discuss that with your veterinarian and, you know, come up with a plan, you know, before you decide to put them on, you know, any sort of medication.
You know, there's also other things, you know, that we can screen older pets for, and we can try and pick up, you know, early in the process of disease that we may be able to manage medically. Things, you know, like, you know, kidney disease, diabetes, you know, thyroid disease, and things, those kinds of things can be medically managed if we catch it early in the disease process. And, you know, we can find those things early by screening, you know, when the pet, you know, starts to become a little bit on the elderly, you know, side.
Right, I find that people oftentimes wait until an animal's very sick.
Exactly.
To do the blood work, which is logical. Yes, you need to do the blood work when they're sick. But if you had that baseline, first of all, to compare to, and also to make sure that you're being proactive and finding things like a little bit off blood work as opposed to this dog is, you know, deathly ill, that you'd have such a better chance of prolonging their lives and for some things that are quite simple.
And these are the kinds of things that we're looking to try and, you know, catch early and hopefully either prevent or help to manage better and give these senior animals, you know, a much better quality of life and perhaps in some cases, you know, prolong their life and give them a much longer life. I mean, you know, if we look at the amount of time our pets get to spend with us, it's relatively short in comparison to most of our lives. And mm-hmm. we want to make that time that we have with them, you know, as long as we possibly can.
Quality time, right, you know, right. Not sick time, because, you know, a lot of times people are trying to hold on at the end when an animal is very sick, and it's very hard for everyone involved because you know why they don't want to let go, because they've really loved that animal. Right. So if we could extend that time, it would be much better.
Right.
So good point.
And I certainly wouldn't, I would want to mention about, you know, dental changes in dogs. You know, certainly as they get older, they can get a lot of tartar buildup on their teeth. And they can, you know, have some gum loss and infections. And I think, you know, we're becoming a lot more aware of dental issues in dogs and cats now in veterinary
and
medicine.
In humans. How, yeah, you know, you bad teeth, bad body. Like, you know.
I mean, even though your dog or cat may be eating, you know, dry food, you know, they can still have a lot of dental pain. You know, they're kind of wired to not show pain, because out in the wild, you know, that's a weakness. So you may not notice it, or there may be some subtle things that you may not notice. And, you know, a lot of people are afraid of anesthesia and things to, you know, for dentistries, where we do a scaling, a cleaning and getting under the gum lines and, you know, doing a good job there. You know, we're pretty advanced now in veterinary medicine as far as monitoring and everything. And senior dogs can do really, really well under anesthesia. You know, a lot of times, you know, most veterinarians now require blood work. So that's something that we look at beforehand in my practice. That's, you know, a requirement before we put any sort of dog under anesthesia. You know, as long as everything looks good there, you know, they can have a relatively safe and effective cleaning done. So it's another thing to keep in mind, even though they're not, you know, outwardly showing signs of pain. I think dental pain, as you know, well as like we discussed, arthritis pain are two big issues as dogs get older.
Good points. This is some good stuff. I can't wait until our next show, so we can bring you more good doggy and kitty information. Thank you very much, Joyce, Hospital Administrator at JM Pet Resort and JM Pet Vet. Thank you, Dr. Page.
You're welcome. It was great to be here.
Thank you. Very nice to have you both. And I'm the dog lady. And so I just want to say one thing. Be healthy, be happy, behaving. Have a great day.